we made the mistake of putting microsimulation in one of our abstract titles, and it drove off a bunch of our audience members. But I'm glad you all stuck it out, because it's far more interesting than the title makes it seem. So today I'm going to do two different, somewhat interconnected presentations. So I'm going to set the stage in this one, and then I'll come back after Dr. Lavareda talks about kind of some of the intricacies of modeling limited English proficiency. But now I'm going to talk briefly about racial ethnic disparities in coverage after the ACA, with the idea that even though we're facing this new world of coverage expansions, of especially in California, there's, you know, full-throated support for expanding Medicaid, taking advantage of the federal subsidies coming in to expand Medicaid to the childless adult population and people who have been left out before, and also kind of a full steam ahead approach on Covered California and the creation of our own state-based health insurance exchange, which arguably has been having a lot fewer problems than the federal exchange. We still are wanted to examine issues going on in California related to racial and ethnic populations and what their likelihood of taking up coverage and using those new options available to them in January 1st, 2014 and beyond. So I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, and this research was funded by partially by the Blue Shield of California Foundation. We have a grant from them to do some work on the remaining uninsured population. So we've been doing work on both the undocumented with Dr. Nadi Perot, who's in the audience, as well as on kind of safety net integration and what's going to happen in the safety net after, related to some of our evaluation work. So Blue Shield has been very proactive in funding kind of a analysis of the safety net in the state. California Endowment and Covered California specifically contracted with us to do some work related to microsimulation. California Endowment was able to support the creation of the California Simulation of Insurance Markets model over the past 3 years or so, and it was a very timely investment in that, you know, that was going on prior to 2010, and we were able to provide estimates during the debates and also just after ACA passage related to the potential impact. And Covered California contracted with us to do estimates related to characteristics of people likely to sign up, and we're able to provide them with some information to help them develop marketing campaigns, giving them some demographic information from both CalSIM as well as the California Health Interview Survey. So the co-authors of the study are Ken Jacobs, Laurel Lucienne, Miranda Dietz, and Dave Graham Squire from UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, and then Nadi Perot from UCLA. In addition, Dr. Kaminsky and I are the PI and co-PI, respectively, of the CalSIM model at UCLA. So all of this is part of a larger team effort. So as I mentioned, CalSIM is funded by California Endowment, but it's really designed to predict the impact of the ACA, and it's done in a very systematic way. It's not simply using California Health Interview Survey data and cutting it up by income. We're actually merging that data with other data sources from the Employer Health Benefits Survey, the Employment Development Department, in order to actually see what employer response should be or would be based on the penalties assessed to employers and what the advantage would be for their employees to take up coverage through the employer-provided insurance, or maybe not take advantage of that coverage offered to them and go use subsidies or sign up in Medi-Cal outside of that employer-employee relationship. We use public data sources for the most part. We are able to get some estimates from the Employer Health Benefits Survey of actuarial value for each of the insurance plans provided through employers that allow us to actually make comparisons between employer plans offered and the individual market plans that are often less robust than the employer plan but may come at a cheaper price and make that comparison between consumers. So in the general modeling approach, we kind of aggregate all these data sets together. We are able to model over the years from 2014 to 19 a state of what the world would have looked like without the ACA if the existing population growth and premium growth estimates were taken into consideration. And then the counter to those estimates of the without ACA world are two scenarios we've established. One is called the base scenario. One is called the enhanced scenario, with the idea being that we wanted to provide some level of boundaries around our estimates rather than establishing one single point estimate to be taken as gospel. So we, in essence, in the base scenario, we use the economic literature to drive assumptions around the model. And it's, you know, very similar from a probabilistic and kind of economic theory model to other national models out there, like John Gruber's models or Lewin Group or, you know, the Urban Institute. But we do kind of customize it to California. So we are using California-specific data sets to actually model the impact on California with a special focus on limited English proficient populations and the undocumented. And the characteristics of firms doing business in California, because they actually look quite a bit different than firms doing business in other parts of the country. California also offers an example of a state that hasn't had great success in expanding public programs before. With Medi-Cal, we only have about 61% of those eligible actually signed up. We had a very slow enrollment of CHIP programs from that took 5 years to reach full enrollment, whereas other states like Massachusetts had kind of rapid take-up of their CHIP programs. And so we take that into consideration in the base model, where we anticipate about 60% of those eligible for subsidies, those eligible for Medi-Cal, will actually take advantage of those. And then those previously eligible for Medi-Cal who have not signed up are less likely to take up coverage, even though they're now faced with a potential penalty for being uninsured. And so that's approximately at 10%. And then, of course, limited English proficient populations, we assume, are less likely to enroll in that base scenario model. And I'll describe how that process actually works in the third session. The enhanced scenario takes multiple factors into account, with the idea that we're actually moving toward no wrong door enrollment, strong outreach and education, kind of culturally competent and language appropriate outreach enrollment, and maximum use of pre-enrollment strategies, moving people from existing programs like SNAP or, you know, the food stamp program or Family Pact or our current low-income health program waiver, to move people into Medi-Cal or into the new subsidies that are available to them. So in this case, the take-up rate ends up working out to about 75% for both the Medi-Cal new eligible population and the subsidized exchange population that was previously uninsured, and about 40% for the previously eligible but uninsured Medi-Cal population. So you'll see the range of values ends up being different because of those core assumptions changing. So you can see here that after running through the model, we have about 36 million people in California, depending on who's counting and when you're counting. We've had some population decline because of economic downturn and some immigration effects. Net migration has actually gone in the negative direction for the undocumented. But when it comes down to it, by 2019, using the CalSIM model, we anticipate that about 3 to 4 million people will remain uninsured, despite the fact that they're offered new coverage options starting in 2014 and beyond. And you can see that in the base model, which anticipates limited English proficient individuals be less likely to enroll, people newly presented with Medi-Cal eligibility would only enroll, you know, 6 and 10 times. You end up with about 48% of the population who aren't eligible due to immigration status or don't have an offer of affordable coverage, so they're therefore precluded from paying the penalty. But you end up with over 50% of the population actually being eligible for exchange subsidies or being eligible for the Medi-Cal expansion, but foregoing that. When you get to the enhanced scenario, you end up with 3.1 million uninsured, but you still have a sizable population, you know, close to 1.4 million people who are either eligible for Medi-Cal or eligible for exchange subsidies or affordable coverage through an employer that also do not take up. So the people left in California who will be residually uninsured aren't just made up of those who will be undocumented or have unaffordable coverage. There will probably be people who do not make that choice and sign up even 5 years out by 2019. And that population is, of course, more sizable in 2014 if we anticipate kind of a phased-in approach as time goes on. So the majority of the remaining uninsured are actually exempt from tax penalties, and that's one of the reasons why, even though people are eligible for Medi-Cal or eligible for health insurance exchange coverage, it's anticipated that some of them will actually not have affordable coverage offered to them. So there's a provision in the law that allows you to opt out if you're spending more than 8% of your family income on coverage, or if you do not meet the tax filing threshold of about $10,000 for an individual and you're not filing a 1040, you don't actually have to take up health insurance, and you avoid that penalty as well. And of course, about a quarter are exempt due to immigration status, being undocumented, and then we anticipate that about a quarter, 28%, are subject to the penalty. Now, that's of those who are eligible for these different programs and residually uninsured, but it really works out to only 3% of all Californians that would actually be uninsured and subject to the penalty. So the differences kind of vary across racial ethnic groups. So you can see here that the status quo without ACA model is in gold on the left, with the light blue representing the base model and the pink representing the enhanced model. So you can see that although as you move through implementation of health reform and assume a better response going from the base model to the enhanced model, you still see more pronounced disparities among the Latino population specifically, where they started at a very high rate of uninsurance, with 23% uninsured without the ACA, it going down to 16.5% with the ACA in the base model, but still being fairly high at 12.5% uninsured even under the enhanced scenario, partially because of undocumented immigrant populations not being allowed into exchanges and not being allowed into the Medi-Cal program, but also because of cultural and language proficiency issues. So you can see that that disparity is more pronounced across the board, and that the ACA will probably make a much larger dent as a proportion of the eligible population in the African American population as well as in the multiracial population. Whites and Asians will benefit substantially, but not at as high of a rate as African Americans. So one of the reasons behind this is the fact that 39% of Californians remaining uninsured actually lack an offer of affordable coverage. Part of that is because they're undocumented and are ineligible for Medi-Cal or the exchange subsidies. Another case is because of the fact that the way the subsidies are represented in the ACA, with this sliding scale from 2 to 9.5% of their income, the ceiling is set a bit high for people at higher income levels. So if you're earning 300% of federal poverty level or more, the cap on your premium spending is at 9.5% of your income. So even though you're eligible for subsidies, that if your premiums exceed 9.5% of your income, if the premium offered to you exceeds 8% of your income, you're allowed to get out of the mandate and not pay a penalty. So there's not as much of an incentive to sign up for those higher income populations. In addition, there's something called the kid glitch, as we not necessarily affectionately call it, but that exists in regulations, where if an employee is offered single-only coverage that's under 9.5% of their wages, their employer, as long as they're offering some dependent coverage, is absolved of any concern about paying that $2,000 to $3,000 employer penalty, the employer shared responsibility penalty, because they're actually offering affordable coverage to the employee. The family plan with the dependent in it or possibly with a spouse in it might cost 25% of that family income, but it wouldn't matter for the purposes of paying the penalty. And because that premium would be so high, it'd be very hard for families to afford, but at the same time, because the employer is meeting that affordable offering requirement for the single-only person, the rest of the family is held out of getting premium subsidies in the exchange. So people falling into that situation will end up spending a lot more money on their premiums because they wouldn't get any subsidies, even if the employer-based coverage wasn't affordable for them from a personal perspective. So the majority of remaining uninsured are predicted to be Latino, with in the base model, with about two-thirds being Latino. The other populations kind of represent the typical mix, although 18% white is fairly low. So we anticipate that white higher income populations are more likely to take up than Latino because they'll be able to take advantage of some subsidies, but also they don't have the same issues around limited English proficiency and knowledge of the law. Latinos are also predicted to comprise about 64% of those eligible for Medi-Cal or exchange subsidies who remain unenrolled. So those should really be the outreach targets for Covered California and probably other state exchanges as well, even though it's likely to be a lower percentage of the population. So you can see here the reasons for remaining uninsured differ quite substantially between Latinos and non-Latinos, with 38% of Latinos not being uninsured because they're not eligible due to immigration status. But you can also see that only 14% are uninsured and still eligible for the exchange without subsidies, where the non-Latino population that's eligible for the exchange without subsidies represents a very large portion of those remaining uninsured because they might lack the ability to take it up or decide it's unaffordable and not have to pay a penalty. But nearly 3 out of 5 California adults who remains uninsured is predicted to be limited English proficient. Over half of them will remain unenrolled, with the most common languages being Spanish, representing about 80% of the population, but other substantial language being Chinese, Vietnamese, and Korean in the state. In addition, most of the uninsured will actually be low income, under 200% of federal poverty level. About 790,000 of them aren't eligible due to immigration status, but you can see here that about two-thirds of this remaining uninsured low-income population under 200% of FPL, where the premium subsidies are capped at 4% of income, which is a fairly generous amount and would probably create substantial subsidies for people, will remain uninsured, and quite a few are eligible for Medi-Cal, with a portion eligible for exchange subsidies but foregoing them. There's no real change in gender distribution. The uninsured is slightly younger due to the Medi-Cal expansion, single adults will represent a smaller share of the uninsured in the future, partially because of the way the law is worded in terms of affordable offer of coverage and making it difficult for families to buy affordable coverage if there's some sort of employer offer. However, this uninsured population shouldn't be kind of viewed as one block entity that kind of votes in a group. Higher income individuals among this uninsured population, so those falling outside of that 200% of FPL chart I just showed, actually have shorter bouts of uninsurance, and so we're likely to see them moving on and off insurance, whether it be through Medi-Cal or, you know, using coverage when open enrollment periods pop up throughout the year, or taking employer-based coverage while they have a position, whereas some people are going to be chronically uninsured, and that tends to be the lower income limited English proficient population. So in order to minimize the number of Californians remaining uninsured, I think it's clear that outreach to Latinos is especially important, but also that language-appropriate outreach is done, so focusing on both cultural and linguistically appropriate communication. And 62% of this population will actually be in 4 Southern California counties, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, and Los Angeles. And so focusing efforts there could make a substantial change in the future uninsured status of that population. And we also need measures to minimize short-term uninsurance. There's some effort in California to establish a bridge program that will allow for people who move from Medi-Cal onto exchange subsidies to stay enrolled in their Medi-Cal plan, where the Medi-Cal plan would become a qualified health plan under the exchange rules and would be able to collect premiums, and there wouldn't be any break in service and people having to go sign up separately. Of course, it may be outside of open enrollment because there's this change in status, losing insurance from one source or another. They would be allowed under special circumstances to sign up. And it's pretty apparent that we still need a fairly strong safety net in California to absorb the remaining uninsured population, especially those under 200% of federal poverty level. There was lots of discussion in California around how to realign county money that was dedicated to the indigent population, with counties being the providers of last resort throughout the state. And there was a deal made to basically on a formula basis each year to compensate counties that might have a higher uninsured population remaining in their county safety net systems. But the resources are still decreasing in both the disproportionate share programs and those county indigent funds in response to the idea that people will be moving into Medi-Cal, people will be moving into the exchange with subsidies. One of the things that the county safety net systems were able to get as part of the settlement, one was to get about 75% of the newly eligible enrolled in Medi-Cal assigned to them as a primary care provider through Medi-Cal managed care companies. And in addition, the state will be paying cost for inpatient hospitalizations for a 2 to 3 year transition period, and then that rate could go down in future budget years. So there's some protection built in, but it may not last, and we'll see how the response occurs with these newly insured individuals and where they move. Another issue is making sure that the existing county and local programs that are, or state-funded populations that are in family planning services, Every Woman Counts, the locally funded Healthy Kids programs are still able to exist. And there's some call for counties to actually create their own programs that might kind of satisfy coverage needs without actually being insurance. So in LA, we currently have a program called Healthy Way LA that was made possible through a state waiver, but the idea is that it might continue on without any federal matching funds, but that would still meet the needs of the residually uninsured population that don't sign up for coverage. So I think we'll take questions at the end, but if you have any comments or questions that you want to email to us, you can use our contact information here.
I think we can take questions now,
okay,
if there are.
Yes. Right. So basically you can see here that without the ACA, 23% of the Latino population would be uninsured, right? So even though they have this, 6.4% reduction in uninsurance due to the base model due to the ACA, you see that African Americans, it's almost cut in half. So because African Americans are more likely to be enrolled in Medi-Cal, number one, but also lack limited English proficient barriers, they're going to be more likely to sign up. In addition, we predict our model is based on the idea that people with worse health status and chronic illness are also more likely to take advantage of these new options, and the African-American population is disproportionately chronically ill and has poorer health status among those who are uninsured. So we anticipate that there's kind of more of a pent-up demand for insurance coverage that people will respond to in that African American population.
How is it expected that they will find out?
In terms of methods or? Right. Well, so, the no wrong door kind of policies anticipate that you could sign up through any type of service use, telephone, online, mail, paper application, et cetera. But I think the community groups that have focused on African Americans in much of California have been pretty successful in plugging them into things like Healthy Way LA. We see higher enrollment among the African American population than you would normally anticipate among the uninsured who are African American if you just looked at population breakdowns. So one issue will be low-income health programs, which are part of the Medicaid waiver in California, will be transitioning everyone over automatically who is in under 133% of FPL and is basically grandfathered into Medi-Cal, assuming their income hasn't changed. And they wouldn't come back up for redetermination for a longer period of time. And those programs have been fairly heavily enrolled in by African Americans, disproportionate to what their uninsured looks like in the county. But there's still a sizable Latino population, but it's not equivalent to the share of Latinos in the county area. So they've already been put into programs like Family Pact, like food stamps that will kind of provide a gateway to getting covered, and the low-income health program is one good example of one of those programs where it's a transitional program and people will be shifted over without any further action. And so that's that difference in race, ethnicity, taking up that program will be embedded in this, the future response as well. Sure. In general, if you look at county eligibles from California Health Interview Survey, for example, usually there's better enrollment in public programs that people are eligible for in African American populations because there are good community connections, there's not a language barrier, and so although there are still uninsured African Americans, they tend to respond better to expansions in public programs when they're eligible. Versus Latino populations are usually under-enrolled. Asian American populations are often under-enrolled.
Yeah, we just have low enrollment with our LIT program, mm-hmm. the county program, the county public program, in our
thing I want to add about Los Angeles specifically, and I'd be really interested to know how this reflects the Bay Area counties or whether or not it does, is I know in the African American community in Los Angeles, the congregations and the faith-based networks have been incredibly helpful. And they've also, at this point, many of them, I know personally pastors who are signing up to be certified as sisters, you know, along with their staff so that they can actually enroll their congregants in Calvary, California. And that kind of outreach is incredibly important. And also in the Latino community is somewhat lacking because the Catholic Church is not moving in that direction, although they are, you know, supportive of their constituents, obviously. But it just, it seems to me that that kind of advocacy on behalf of their congregants is also making a large difference in that community.
Yeah, and also I think demographic shift, right, from poor areas to suburbs is also, I think, maybe interesting as you see with this shifting census data, that people aren't living in large, you know, like in one supervisory district. We're in kind of like concentrated in one congressional district, and, you know, that sort of landscape is changing. So, as well as, you know, attendance at certain faith-based institutions.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether I may not have understood it right, but you said that we project the demographics of the remaining uninsured, that there won't be any changes in gender distribution. And wouldn't it be that if now men can qualify for Medicaid and before they couldn't because they didn't have kids themselves? So that now more men would be able to enroll in Medicaid so that you kind of have a lower proportion of uninsured men?
Mm-hmm. Also, that's baked into the response as well. So if you think about how we model the CalSIM model, we are also assuming that men are less likely to take up available coverage. So I wouldn't assume that just because of the ACA, that if it makes sense economically from just a, you know, compare my insurance premiums with subsidies to the cost of the penalty, you're still probably going to see the same differential effect where women are more likely to sign up, even, you know, even though they, you know, men now have this new coverage option. I would say among the Medi-Cal expansion population, you may see a higher number of men coming in, but I don't know that they'll trump women, especially if you're looking at the child adult women population. And most of the growth actually will be probably in the 40 to 55-year-old age group, I would say, from our models.
And doesn't the LIP enrollment shed some light on this?
Right. And so, yeah, so the LIP enrollment is actually roughly 50-50 men for the most part. So there does look to be in the low-income health program that men are more likely versus their population characteristics, but they're also more likely to be uninsured right now. So it's not apparent that they're better at responding to these new programs that have been made available over the past 3 years. You know, a lot of the low-income health programs sign people up when they show up for problems, so men may have pent-up issues that end up hitting the ER and they get signed up on the spot retroactively. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Roby.